It's Flo, and this is my impression of a drill instructor directing a musical.
Tan Hut! Get those tap heels in line and let me see those jazz hands! Are you bundling your home and auto insurance through Progressive? Can you hear me through those sequins?
Bundle your home and auto through Progressive and save.
Left, 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 and step ball change.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company Affiliates. Home insurance provided and serviced by other select insurers.
This is Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
I am so glad our trails have crossed. Oh, the joy you bring to me. And as I look upon each face, such kindness there I see. I wish for you the love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Our trails now go their separate ways, and life goes rolling on. I hope our trails will cross again before God takes us home. We share the wondrous love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Yes, as we travel life's long path,
to Blessed Trails. I am your host, Belinda Gale, and our show features interviews with wonderful guests, as well as gospel, patriotic music, and songs that just plain lift your heart, most all of them with a definite Western flair. Our guest today grew up with an amazing, iconic family, and it is going to be so much fun talking with her. But before we do that, let's listen to a song by her father and his equally iconic group, Roy Rogers and the Sons of the Pioneers, singing When the Golden Train Comes Down.
Up in the sky
when the golden train comes down,
with an invitation for you and I.
When the golden train comes down,
I'm gonna take tickets at the Golden Gate, gonna dance with Peter, make the angels wait, and just be me, I think I'll be late.
When the golden train comes down,
all aboard,
all aboard,
all aboard,
all aboard, gonna ring the bell, gonna bid farewell when the golden train comes down.
Time.
When the golden train comes down,
with her heavenly crew all looking fine.
When the golden train comes down,
so turn on your steam and let her ride. Make the devil throw coal on the old coal slide. And if you don't work hard, I'm gonna tan his hide.
When the golden train comes down,
all aboard,
all aboard,
all aboard,
all aboard, gonna ring the bell, gonna bid farewell when the golden train comes down.
Thank you. trip that's gonna be
when the golden train comes down,
with the angels serving pie and tea
when the golden train comes down.
You're gonna see Gabriel, sure as your barn, sitting on the smokestack blowing his horn, but he can stand up if it gets too warm
when the golden train comes down.
All the bulls,
all the bulls,
all the bulls,
all the bulls, gonna ring the bell, gonna bid farewell when the golden train comes down.
Music. It is wonderful. Well, growing up in a very public family is not the easiest thing in the world, and I know this lovely lady certainly had her challenges with that, but she grew into a wonderful, gracious woman, accomplished in her own right, and is beloved by many in the Western music world. She is an author, a producer, and a keeper of the family flame as she and her husband, Larry, travel the country sharing films and stories and just talking about her beloved parents, Roy Rogers and Dale Evans. I am thrilled to have on the show today their eldest daughter and a dear friend, Cheryl Rogers Barnett. Welcome to the show, Cheryl.
Oh, thanks, Belinda. It's such a pleasure to be here with you.
Oh, I've been so excited, and we both have crazy schedules. You're gallivanting all over the country, as am I. So it's been a bit of a challenge to get hooked up to get this done, but I'm so glad that you're able to make it today. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. I love working with you.
Oh, well, the feeling is absolutely mutual, my sweet friend. So before we, get into what's going on now in your life, I think everybody our age and older all wanted to be you when we were kids and, to have Roy Rogers and Dale Evans as parents. But it started out when you are actually Roy's daughter from previous marriage. And so can you tell us what your childhood was like pre-Dale?
Well, Mommy was extremely different than Dale. Mommy was Arlene Wilkins from Roswell, New Mexico. And she had been raised to be a wife and mother. So she was an incredible cook, a great seamstress. She was an accomplished pianist. My grandmother was a music teacher, a piano teacher, and the daughter of a Methodist minister. So Mommy had a very quiet upbringing in Roswell when she was a young girl. Roswell was still, little tiny. That was before the Second World War. Mm-hmm. So I think Hollywood was an extreme challenge for her because she was very introverted, very quiet. Mm-hmm. So Dad and his friends, because at that point in Dad's life, he was a kid. So his friends were usually the stunt guys and the wrestlers down at Muscle Beach and Santa Monica and those guys. I mean, they were all jocks and athletes. So It was had to have been a real challenge for her, bless her heart. But she carried it off. And she answered Dad's fan mail. I didn't realize that until recently. And I came across some letters that my grandmother, that Nana Wilkins, had answered as part of the fan mail. Mm. And she was talking about Mommy answering hundreds of letters. That had to be when I was little tiny. And I had no memory of that. I just remember the wonderful thing she would cook, and she let me help since I was the oldest. I got to help her in the kitchen, and I still love being in the kitchen, as you know.
And you're good at it. You're good at it.
I really enjoy it.
Wow.
When Mommy died, and Dad was left widowed, the studio did this huge Bachelor father publicity thing. Think of The Bachelor on TV now, and that's sort of what the studio did to Dad. And they arranged dates for him and stuff like that. And Dad, to get us away from Hollywood and the publicity and the craziness after Mommy died, Dad bought a ranch up on top of a mesa up at Lake Hughes, which before the 5 freeway went through was really in the boondocks. I mean, way in the boondocks. And we only came down, well, we came down every other weekend to go to Nana and Granddaddy Wilkins' house. And then we came down and did publicity layouts with Dad at the market and at Kittyland and Studio City, which was a neat little tiny kids' park. Mm-hmm. Anyway, after he married Dale, things got incredibly busy for everybody.
I bet. Now, one of the things you have a wonderful book, by the way, we might as well talk about right now about the Cowboy Princess. And
Cowboy Princess,
yes. And you talk about how that you liked Dale before, you know, when she was making movies with your dad before they got married, because she would let you try on her makeup and stuff, but then that kind of changed. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, well, she was so beautiful. My word, she was just absolutely gorgeous. And she was older than most of Dad's other co-stars who were teenagers. And, of course, teenage girls don't want a 5, 6, 7-year-old around.
Right.
And with Mom, she already had a son, although it wasn't publicized at that time. And she didn't mind having a little girl in there. In fact, she mm-hmm. said in one of her books, in a couple of interviews, that she always had wished that I was her daughter. So, I mean, she always said later, be careful what you wish for. Because Dad made the mistake of telling me that since I was the oldest, when Mommy died, I was in charge of Linda Lou and Dusty. Oh. And boy, I liked being in charge. Linda Lou took to calling me Queenie. So, yeah, not complimentary.
Oh,
but,
my gosh.
You know, even though I had been just wild about her as Dad's co-star, Dad never told us that he was dating anybody or that he was thinking of remarrying. And I can understand it since I was 6 1/2. And, of course, Lynn was 3 years younger. But it was really a surprise when they came up after the first of the year, came up to the ranch, and Dad says, you know, Bill is your new mother. I mean, just like he surprised her with moving to Apple Valley when she wanted to move to the beach.
He likes surprises, yeah. Your dad.
Yeah, probably just about the same amount of enthusiasm initially.
Yeah, that's
anyway, I mean, bless her, she really was a saint, and she put up with me. And when I wrote the first book, Cowboy Princess, Linda Lou asked me afterwards, she says, well, how come you didn't put in there how mean you were to her, and you wouldn't let me call her mom or anything? I had to call her mother. And I, you know, we do tend to blank out the really nasty things we do if we can, and I had totally forgotten that. But I did. I mean, I just wrote another book called Cowboy Princess Rides Again, and I put it in this time. I mean, you got to tell the bad things about yourself as well as the good.
Gosh, well, you were six. Give yourself a break. And you're trying to adjust from being in charge to all of a sudden some other woman is in charge. So I can certainly imagine that. Now, I don't know at what point Dale really became a Christian. I know that that wasn't always part of her life. I mean, I think she always believed in God and all of that. But but I know that at one point she really did switch and start dedicating her life to the Lord. And so what part did church and serving the Lord play as you kids were growing up?
Well, when we were little, as I say, my grandmother was a Methodist minister's daughter. So whenever we stayed at my grandparents' on a weekend, we always went to the Methodist church with Nana and Granddaddy. I really loved that. I loved being in Sunday school. And the Methodists, just like the Catholics, they would give you these neat little book markers and things like that if you memorized enough Bible verses over the week. And I was really good at doing that memorization stuff at that point. So I had a big collection of bookmarks. And then Mom said that when Dad, the night before she and Dad got married, they eloped to Oklahoma. And it was in a blizzard. So they're out on this ranch. And she said she went into the closet of the bedroom and got on her knees and promised God that, you know, since this looked like what he wanted her to do, that she would never have another divorce, because she had been divorced three times. And that if, since he was finally letting her get the family she had always wanted, and that was next to performing, that was her big drive, was to be a mom. Mm. So she said, you know, she prayed and she felt that he answered that. So she married Dad. And when they got back home and we all moved into this house in Hollywood, her son Tommy was already engaged. He was a senior at USC. And he and his fiance were attending Fountain Avenue Baptist Church, which was Reverend Jack MacArthur's church. And Tommy asked Mom, just a couple of weeks, I think, after they got married, he said, you know, Mom, how is your relationship with God? Because she'd been raised Southern Baptist. My grandparents were very religious, and her maternal grandparents were even more. I mean, they were very strict Southern Baptists. Mm-hmm. So she had a really good founding. But the drive to be in show business, she'd gotten away from it. And so she said that she thought about Tommy's question, and he asked her the next week if she'd go to church with him. And she did. So when Reverend MacArthur, when he gave the call at the end of the service, she went down and rededicated her life. Now, I don't remember her ever being on Dad to go to church with her. I mean, she'd take us kids, but I don't, other than she might have asked him initially, but I think what happened, she was so changed. She was so happy. She just glowed. And I think it really intrigued him. So he decided to go to church with us one Sunday to see what was going on, because he really had no religious training at all. He grew up in the center of Appalachia in a little tiny place called Duck Run. Good luck finding that on a map. And they didn't have a church. They didn't have anything, but itinerant preachers would go through, Dad said. They'd pitch a tent. They'd take what little money the people that lived there in the holler had, and then they'd leave. Mm. So Dad did not think very highly of preachers at all. So for him, after, I don't know, it seemed very short. I mean, like 3 or 4 weeks later, Dad and I were both being baptized.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it really changed his life, you know. But she was such an inspiration and such an example. And that to me was the main thing. Mom was never preachy. She lived her belief. Mm. And you could just see it in her face.
Yes, I would agree with that. Yep.
Not to say if people asked her about her faith, if she wouldn't tell them.
Right. I think she would pretty much speak her mind about any subject from what little bit I was able to be around her when she was with us. She was pretty outspoken.
But she never foisted it upon you. I mean, you had to ask.
Yes. Wow.
So, I mean, she was a brilliant, brilliant, talented, wonderful lady.
What a wonderful way to grow up. Well, we're going to go to a song, and we're going to talk more about your life with them and about you. But we're going to do a fun song now that I found called Cowman's Prayer. So let's listen to that.
A cowboy to hear, no doubt the prayer may seem strange, but I want you to bless our
song. I had so much fun going around, searching around iTunes and finding songs for the show. It was so fun. Songs I'd never heard your folks do. Yeah.
Oh, you know, they recorded hundreds of songs, and they sang even more because they had a radio show for years called Saturday Night Random.
Yeah.
And, they just did fabulous music on that. Most of it Western, and you know, or Western leaning like this. But Dad did some other stuff on there too. I remember that I loved Old Man River. I love Showboat, and I used to ask Dad to sing it in the car because we never had the radio on in the car. Dad always sang, so he did it, and it was. He did it just fantastic. So I begged and pleaded and nagged until he did it on one of his radio shows. But he sang
it was
beautiful.
Probably a huge hit. I bet it was a huge hit, too.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Well, I know from reading your book, which is a wonderful book, by the way, anybody who is a fan of your families would definitely want to get this book. You're so candid and so open and I'm vulnerable even in that book. I just admire how you wrote it. And I'd love to talk a little bit about how you know, as, you know, trying to adjust, you and Dale were just not getting along, and you actually asked to be sent away to boarding school. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I went to Villa Cabrini, which was a Catholic school there in Glendale, and I went there for about a year and a half until I started developing stomach troubles, and I think it was just their food. Bless their heart. The nuns there were so sweet, but there was not a single nun that could cook. In fact, I just heard from one of my schoolmates, just got a letter from her a couple of days ago, and she said, oh, the memories the new book brought back, but especially the horrid food. but and as I said, I mean, I forbid Linda Lou to call Mom. I mean, she had to say Mother, because in my 7-year-old mind, which is what I was when they got married, I mean, there was only one Mommy, and Dale was never going to take her place. So it wasn't until Mom got pregnant with Robin, and I don't know if it's just being female or what, but I mean, Linda Lou and I were so thrilled at the thought of having a little brother or sister. And bless Mom, it was such a difficult pregnancy. She had mumps in her third month.
Oh, wow.
She fell down a flight of stairs because the house we had in Hollywood was built on like 4 or 5 different levels. There were stairs to everywhere. And
wow.
She was coming down from her bedroom and partially fell down the flight of stairs that went down into the living room.
Wow.
And she started bleeding, but they had a radio show to do that night. And she was always a trooper. And I don't know. I mean, it just, everything was wrong. And then about 2 months before Robin was born, the doctors brought up the fact that they had an Rh problem. Dad was positive, she was negative. And they started saying, you know, that maybe they would have to give the baby a complete transfusion when it was born. I mean, they were scared about that. And again, that was that old thing. Mom said that she had always wanted a baby girl to raise. She had Tommy, her son, and you gotta be careful with what you wish for, because I mean, Robin, oh bless her, she was so dear, such a sweet little spirit, but she had Down syndrome, and the doctors all told Mom and Dad, you know, don't even take her home. It will break your heart. She'll never recognize you. She'll never be more than a baby mentally. That was the feeling back then. And they said, you know, just put her in a hospital and see her as little as possible so that you don't get too attached, because she will not live long. And Dad just, he refused to listen to that. He said, you know, God gave her to us for a reason. And Mom and Dad, luckily, were financially able to have a nurse 24/7. And they brought her home. So she was part of our family. And they never tried to hide her or anything. It was one of those God-driven things, because when we had done shows before, when I remember going with Mom and Dad and doing public appearances, you never saw a handicapped adult, much less a child that was handicapped, out in public. It just wasn't done in the 40s. And as soon as people found out that Robin had Down syndrome, Mom was getting letters from people, even in our own church, saying, you must have done something really horrible, and this is God's punishment.
Oh, awful.
Oh, yeah. Because, again, back then, you know, there was so much superstition involved with religion, even in the 40s still.
Yeah.
And
wow.
People really believed that. So I know it was really difficult for them, but they took a stand. And within a year or two after Mom wrote Angel and Aware, when Robin passed, within just a year, we would do a rodeo, and there would be a whole section of kids, special needs kids. And, I mean, they just, worldwide, they made a huge difference.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just like, I mean, Dad had been going into children's hospitals from when he first started entertaining, and Trigger was the first, what do they call it now, service animal?
Service animal, yes.
Yeah, I mean, he went into children's hospitals. Dad had rubber horseshoes made for him. And, I mean, now, of course, that would never be allowed. But the kids just, the response that he would get. And then later he took Bullet with him. But, yeah, therapy animals, that's it. Yep.
Yes, therapy animals. Well, I do know, I mean, I read your mom's book, of course, many times. And the thing that was, when I first got the book, I wasn't expecting the way because she wrote it from Robin's perspective, which was just amazing. And it just... And knowing your mom, I know how it really changed people's perception of handicapped children and how you raise them, and you know, and that you know that you really do integrate them into your life. And I think she really, you know, met medicine back then and the culture like dehumanized these children, where your mother humanized her, and that she was a little human being with thoughts and feelings and ideas, and maybe she wasn't up to speed with the other children, but she was still a precious little child. And it was, if anybody out there has not read that book, you can still get a hold of it, and it is just a fabulous, fabulous book. And your mom wrote it so simply and beautifully.
Yeah, it's a little tiny thin book, but it has changed so many people's lives. Mom always said that God gave it to her.
Wow.
She had never written a book. She had been writing music since she was like 7 years old. But she, as far as I know, she had never thought of writing a book. And she was in New York right after Robin's death. And she met with Dr. Norman Vincent Peale. And she told him that she felt that God wanted her to write about Robin. And he said, well, if you're being led that way, for heaven's sakes, you know, open yourself up and it will come. And, boy, it did. I mean, it was there so quickly.
Wow.
And as you say,
it's
you
an
can
easy
still
read.
Get it. Amazon, every now and again on eBay. But it's, I don't know how many of my friends and acquaintances who have had a child with special needs or who have lost a child or a loved one that I've given that little book to, because it's just, it's such a help.
It's precious.
It's a fabulous little book.
And another thing that was, I mean, not only did on a global level, just how your parents dealt with and handled and embraced the challenge of disabilities and you know, refused to hide her away and brought that changed the world's perception. But I love how in the book that you said that just changed your relationship with Dale, and it was, you know, forever healed after that. It was, that was a wonderful part of your book that I really enjoyed reading.
Yeah, well, one day I was still calling her mother, and I don't even know how the transition happened, but she was Mom from then on. And, yeah, I was really lucky because we were really close. And she was just such a unique lady.
Mm.
So I was very blessed.
Yes, yes. Well, I love, we're going to do another song. This one she's singing, and it's a Stuart, it starts out with the Stuart Hamblin song, This Old House. And they were good friends with the Hamblins, were they not? It seemed to me that they were, because they all kind of lived in that same area with the Tuttles as well. And they've had a connection with Wes and Marilyn Tuttle, and it's just so fun how all those lives interacted and connected and overlapped, and just a wonderful world. But we're going to listen to Dale sing This Old House and The World Is Not My Home.
This old house once knew my children. This old house knew a lot of life. This old house was home and comfort as we fought off storm and strife. This old house once rang with laughter. This old house heard many a shout. Now she trembles in the darkness when the lightning walks about. Ain't it gonna need this house no longer. Ain't it gonna need this house no more. Ain't got time to fix the shingles. I ain't got time to fix the floor. Ain't got time to oil the hinges. Mommy in the window frame. Ain't it gonna need this house no longer. I'm getting ready to meet the same. This old house is a getting shaky. This old house is a getting old. This old house lets in the rain. This old house lets in the cold. On my knees I'm getting chilly, but I feel no fear and a pain, cause I see an angel peeking through a broken window pane. Oh Lord, you know I have no friend like you. And if heaven's not my home, then Lord, what will I do? The angels beckon me from heaven's open door. Breaking down, and I get the saddest feeling every time I look around. But the good book says to look up, redemption draweth nigh. I'll soon be leaving this old house for a mansion in the sky. I ain't gonna need this house no longer. I won't need this house no more. Ain't got time to fix the shingles. I ain't got no time to fix that floor. Ain't got time for all the hinges, no mendo window pane. Ain't gonna need this house no longer. Well, I'm getting ready. Ain't gonna need this house no longer. Won't need this house no more. Ain't got time to fix the shingles. Ain't got time to fix the floor. Ain't got time to oil the hinges, nor to mend that window pane. Ain't gonna need this house no longer. I'm getting ready to meet the saints. Ain't gonna need this house no longer. Ain't gonna need this house no longer. I'm getting ready to meet the saints.
Wow, it just ends. That is,
you know,
fun how she combined those two songs.
People know now, you know, that Mom was a good writer of books. She wrote 28, I think it is, and contributed to other people's, and of course, tons of magazine articles, things like that. But they don't realize what a great songwriter she was. I mean, everybody knows Happy Trails. I don't think most people realize that she was the one that wrote it. But she copyrighted like 62 songs, and after she passed, we found several in the back of the museum that she'd never even sent in. And when she and Dad did the variety shows and when they went out and did state fairs, she's the one who basically put those medleys together. She would write the bridges that get you from one song to the other and then back again maybe. And she was just a brilliant musician.
Mm. I did know she had written Happy Trails, but I did not know about the other. So yeah, she was wonderful. And I just loved her voice, and I loved the spirit that came through her voice, and oh my gosh. And You arranged for me to. I'd met her several times, you know, like in passing at events where she had been, because when in the Western music world, when she were, thankfully she and your dad were still alive when I got in Western music. So I was able to meet them socially several times, and always gracious and lovely people. But you actually arranged for me to come to your mom's house, and we sat down with her for about a half an hour or so, and I got to sing for her, and she spoke with me, and her body was very, very frail, and we actually ended up losing her just a couple months after that. But I was so struck when you're talking about her face and what she radiated. Her eyes were just glittering with life and vibrancy and joy when you would talk with her. And it was stunning to me. And she really, she set the tone for my career. I don't know if I've ever really shared this with you, and it's, I'm getting emotional. But the way she made me feel when I was talking with her, she makes you feel like you're the only person in the room, and you are the only person she's interested in talking to. She's not looking over your shoulder. She's not looking around. And I thought, man, and I thought, I want to make people feel that way. That, you know, Christians, we should, everybody we come into contact with, they should go away feeling how important they are, and that they are special, and that they are cared about. And your mother just drove that home to me in such a gracious and precious way without even realizing what she was doing. She really set the course for me for how I've tried to pursue my career. And I mean, what an amazing, amazing woman, and what a privilege for you to be, you know, with her on a daily basis. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she really was remarkable. When her last book, Rainbow on a Hard Trail, came out, she did a book signing up in Lone Pine, California. And this young woman was there named Catherine Adams. And she talked to Mom for like 5 minutes, something like that. And she has always said ever after that Mom changed her life. Mm-hmm. And she's now working on a movie project called Queen of the West, and wants to tell the story of Mom from when she was like 14 years old up until she and Dad marry. And I mean, she's found it fascinating. She's been working on it for years, and I think she's finally got a script that she likes. But I was with her this past weekend again in Lone Pine, and I thought it was just so funny. I mean, it's sort of coming full circle again. But Mom, she just loved people. I mean, Dad was so introverted, and he liked performing in football arenas because the audience would be a big blur out there. And then afterwards, on trigger, he would race around the arena and shake all the little kids' hands, because he always asked the little kids to come up to the rail. But he was so introverted, he really did not like performing with an audience very much. Where Mom, she always said that she just couldn't understand entertainers that had to do drugs or alcohol or anything to get up, because she said, all you have to do is just put me on a mic in front of a group of people.
And I'm higher than a kite.
I mean, dancing up and down with energy. And she was. I mean, that was her drug of choice, was performing. Whether it was singing music or giving her testimony, she just wanted to share it with everybody.
Well, she was precious. And I know your dad was more introverted, and he much preferred the company of children, because he was so, so good with children. And I understand that, I mean, he did, you know, probably hundreds and hundreds of times when he went into hospitals and talked with children and entertained children and uplifted them. And from what conversations you and I had had, that he really, I mean, his handlers, you know, the studios and whatever, they would have to really twist his arm for him to allow them to come in and film any of that, because that was not why he was doing that. He would just as soon nobody even know he was there. He just wanted to go in and encourage those children. And, I mean, what an amazing man your dad was as well.
Yeah, he really was. A good friend of Larry's and mine, Patrick Curtis, his dad was the controller at Republic, and so Patrick and I have known each other all of our lives. But he had polio as a kid, and he was at Los Angeles Children's Hospital. And Dad and Trigger came to see them, and they passed out comic books and all. And Patrick still has what Dad gave him that day, and he said it just was a high point, you know, and possibly a turning point to his treatment, because, I mean, that was so prevalent when I was little. I remember them closing all of the public pools and everything in Los Angeles, because it was just terrifying to parents. And, yeah, I mean, Dad was so good about that. But I also remember the number of calls that he would take at home from sick kids.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, nobody knew, but they would write. Dad had his own fan mail office because the studio would never pay for any of it. So Dad had a couple of his sisters. That was my first job in 1952 when I was 12. My first paying job was to be in Dad's fan mail office for the summer. And whenever we would get letters from parents with sick kids, you know, we were instructed to let them know and get a phone number if we could, and Dad would call them.
Oh my gosh, that's just, I just love your parents more than I ever have. They're just, and you too, because I mean, when we met, Cheryl, your parents were aging and dealing with all the issues of aging and the health challenges, and I mean, you really stepped up and became their primary caregiver and for a lot of years. And I just so admire you for that. And I know you talked about that in your latest book. And can you share a little bit about that with us?
Well, being the oldest daughter, you know, it often falls there. And Larry and I, luckily, were in a position that we were able to move up to Apple Valley. There was, you know, times that were really sad, other times that were really funny. They both really faced some health challenges. Dad had had heart problems for, well, since I think 1959, 60, when he developed angina. So he had some challenges with that, and he wanted to step back from the museum, so he asked me if I would go up and manage it. And I, since I was living on the coast and they were living in Apple Valley up on the high desert, I didn't see them day to day and didn't really realize what was going on with them physically. And Dad and, to a lesser extent, Mom and their friends from church had all been sort of changing meds a bit. You know, I mean, if they were somewhere social and Dad says, oh, you know, I have just had this awful sinus or a cold that just won't go away or whatever, you know, one of their friends would say, oh, well, my doctor gave me this type of thing. And I mean, they were in their late 70s and didn't think anything of it. Anyway, Dad, because of the heart meds that he was on, when we got up there, Mom says, well, there's something really wrong with your father. I think he's getting senile. So anyway, I went in to their bathroom and looked in the medicine cabinets, and good Lord Almighty, I mean, there was everything. You could have opened your own pharmacy with what was in there.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my
gosh. So I took grocery bags and filled them three grocery bags full of over-the-counter and prescription meds and took them in to a pharmacist because they had been using a small pharmacy that at that time was not on computer. And so I went to one of the big pharmacies and I asked the pharmacist, I said, what happens if you take all this stuff? And he says, you know, well, the age and the weight. And he says, you die.
You die.
Yeah. So Dad was lucky in that all he was doing was hallucinating a bit. But Larry had the idea of asking one doctor to be in control because one of the problems as you age, as Larry and I are now finding out, you all of a sudden, instead of just your family practitioner, you have an arthritis specialist and you have a heart specialist and you have this specialist and that one. So they were all prescribing meds and none of them were talking to each other. And that was back before, I mean, now every time we walk in our doctor's door, they want us to either carry all of our meds in or at least have a list saying, you know, what we're taking. But back then they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So medicine, thank heavens, has finally caught up with a lot of that. But when I was doing this new book, their doctor, Dr. Dale Isaiah, who is a specialist cardiologist at Loma Linda University, he had been after Larry and I. He wanted us to do a whole book on taking care of aging parents. I only know from my own experience, so that's not
right.
enough to write a whole book about it.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
I did want to put in a chapter of some of the things that happened with my folks. And then I asked Dr. Isaiah, who's just the most wonderful man, I asked him if he would write a chapter. When Larry first met him at Loma Linda, he was in charge of the pacer clinic, and both mom and dad had heart monitors, had pacemakers. And he was just so common sense, and he was computer savvy. So Larry said, you know, this is the guy we should ask to be in charge of them, which is what we did. And it was really difficult, especially with some of the specialists at other hospitals, to get
uh-huh.
them to make nice. But usually we were able to do that. I mean, there was one doctor that he'd ordered some tests for mom. No, he hadn't. Mom's doctor, her general practitioner, wanted something done at one of the local hospitals. And this man was in charge of cardiology at the time. And he took it upon himself without talking to her GP or Dr. Isaiah, even though their names were on mom's chart. He took it upon himself to change her meds. And where she had just gone in for a simple test, I got to the hospital, and she had been sick to her stomach for like 2 hours. And she was fine when we took her in there that morning for this test. So I'm asking them, you know, what's going on? What happened? You know, is she allergic to the test? Well, they hadn't even run the test yet. And I said, but, you know, has her doctor, you know, been consulted? And I called his office, and they'd never called him. I called Dr. Isaiah. I said, have you heard from him? No, he had no idea this was happening. And by the mid-afternoon, mom had a slight heart attack. Anyway, we got her, yeah, he had changed her meds without telling anybody.
Wow.
And so we got her out of that. We had to have an ambulance, take her down to Loma Linda and get her squared away again, get her back on schedule. And this doctor kept telling me, I told him to go pound sand. I never paid him a penny. I said, she was not your patient. you had no call to even be in her room, you know, and wow. you almost killed her, and you think I'm going to pay you for it?
Yeah, don't mess with Cheryl when she messes with her parents. Oh, my gosh.
I'm really surprised, but they finally just stopped billing us.
Yeah, oh, well, good. I think, gosh, anybody who has parents, which is a whole bunch of us right now, would be really, it would behoove us to get a hold of that book. And you sent me one, so I have my own copy, which is wonderful. Thank you for that. But yeah, just for those two chapters alone, it sounds like this book is a good one to get. And so I just really love how you and Larry are going around and, you know, sharing your knowledge. I mean, sharing your family. You guys, we're getting low on time, and I do want people to know about what you and Larry are doing as far as the programs that you present around the country about your folks. Can you tell us briefly about that?
Well, we've put together a couple of little short documentaries on each of them that run about 25 minutes. And then I do a little speaking, and then I do question and answers for as long as people are, you know, as long as they have questions or as long as time is there. And,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I find it really interesting because I never thought that I, you know, other than within a family where I'm a loud mouth, that I had that much to say. But, I mean, the reception is really great. And the reception for my new book, I mean, that just has really bowled me over, because the first time, I have a messy mind and tend to jump around, and the first time I had help with organizing the book into chapters and all, where this time I was on my own. So I was really afraid that people wouldn't be able to find the continuity there, but they seem to really be enjoying it. And especially the two chapters on caring for aging parents. Now, Dr. Isaiah is wonderful, and that's professional information and all, but I've already had a couple of calls with people that said, oh, what a help that was, because I've been going through this with my father, and I was so worried that I was doing the wrong thing, or, you know, that type of thing. So I'm glad it's helping people. It's out there on Amazon.com, Cowboy Princess Rides Again, or you can go to my website, which is Cheryl Rogers. CHERYLROGERS.com.
Wow. Well, everybody needs to pick up that book. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that before we say goodbye in the next little segment. But we are going to go to another song now. Now, I know your mom wrote Faith, Hope, and Charity. Did she write Let Us Love, or did she just put those two together?
I think she wrote that one as well, because that's the title of one of her books.
Okay, well, this is a wonderful, I love how she put some of these songs together. So this is Let Us Love and Faith, Hope, and Charity.
There is just one commandment Jesus gave us. And he said it was the greatest of all. He said that we should love one another. This could save us from destruction and a fall. Let us love one another, love one another. Look for the good and forget all the others. Let us smile at each other, smile at each other. Let us smile, warm the heart of a cold, cold brother. When we raise up another, we grow a little taller too. Everyone is my brother. Let us do what we must do. Let us work with each other, pray with each other, love one another. Let us love, let us love.
kind of house, and I'll live in one that suits me. And you go to your kind of church, and I'll go to mine happily. We have the same sweet Lord and the same Holy Spirit, but unless we love each other when we pray, he's not going to hear it. Let us love one another, love one another, love for the good and forget all the other. Let us smile at each other, smile at each other. Let us smile, warm the heart of a cold, cold brother when we raise up another. We grow a little taller too.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Cheryl. This has been so much fun, and I think anybody listening to the show will just get a little more insight into who your folks were and who you are. And I certainly hope you and have you come to their, I guess you go to churches and organizations and events. I've seen you do beautiful presentations at events that where we've been together, and you and Larry both just do a fabulous job with all of this.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on your show. It's been a great pleasure.
Oh, well, it absolutely has been our pleasure as well. And in addition to your Cowboy Princess books, you have a great cookbook of different entertainers that you have compiled. It's wonderful. And so can you remind everybody, go ahead and give your website address of where they can find this stuff?
Okay. It's CherylRogers.com, and that's CherylRogers. I am on Facebook as Cheryl Rogers, author, or Cheryl Barnett. And then the new book is out on Amazon, as is the All-American Cowboy Grill. But you can also get that, I think, at Barnes & Noble and Sheplers, and some other places.
Yep. Great cookbook. There's lots of good, fun stuff in there. And it's a neat cover, so it's just fun to just, like, have propped up on the shelf. So very, very cowboy. It's very cool. Thank you again so much for being on. I'll give my love to your sweet Larry, and I look forward to the next time our trails cross, hopefully sooner than later.
Wonderful. Look forward to it. Take care, my dear.
You too, sweetie. And yes, you too, dear. God bless. And we are going to close with her folks' iconic Happy Trails.
Happy Trails. Clouds when we're together.
Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather.
Happy trails to you till we meet again. Thank you. happy trails to you till we meet again. Who cares about the clouds when we're together?
Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather.
Happy trails.
I tell you what, that song, it's so sweet and so simple, yet I just love it. It's been such a delight to have Cheryl on the show today and to learn more about her family and her parents, Roy and Dale. They truly are national treasures. And one of the things I admire and love about Cheryl is her loyalty and steadfast friendship, not only with me and my husband, Bob, but I have observed that same loyalty and dedication to her friendships with others as well. That is something her parents epitomized, and she definitely took their example to heart. I believe that is one of the reasons she's so beloved in our Western music circles. Kind and supportive friend are some of the hallmarks of Christianity. There are so many scriptures that instruct us on this throughout the Bible. Here are a few of my favorites. There are several in Proverbs. One of them being Proverbs 21:21, pursues righteousness and kindness, will find life, righteousness, and honor. And one of my all-time favorite scripture that for me talks about the importance of friends and the ability of friends to inspire and challenge each other to be so much more than they ever thought they could be is Proverbs 27:17. Iron sharpens iron and sharpens another. And then moving into the New Testament, we are told in Hebrews 10:24, let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works. Now, for me, that says that as Christians, we are to always be on the lookout for ways to encourage and inspire each other, just like her mom and dad, especially our friends. Can you imagine what kind of a world we would live in if everyone took that scripture to heart? And then, of course, there is another one of my very favorites in John 13:35. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Being a good, faithful friend and demonstrating kindness to others is not just good for us, it's good for those around us. And it actually is a profession of our faith and another way to glorify our precious Lord. So if you're not already living this way, I would encourage you to love and support your friends in your heart. Be ever on the lookout for ways to encourage and demonstrate kindness to others. And as you do this, just watch your friendships blossom and be amazed at how full and happy your heart will become. As in all things, you can't outgive God. And as you give love, friendship, and kindness to others in the name of our Lord, just watch as he lavishes it back onto you through others. Well, that is our show for today. I am so delighted y'all could join us. Thank you for giving us the gift of your time. And thank you again to our very special guest and my precious friend, Cheryl Rogers Barnett, for sharing a bit of herself and her precious family with us today. And, of course, a huge thank you to my amazing producer, Gary Holt, for all he does behind the scenes to make this show happen. And please remember, all of the fabulous shows on Equestrian Legacy Radio are archived for you to listen to at your convenience. And you can even download our nifty mobile app, Go With You. So if you like our show, please help us spread the word by liking us on Facebook and telling your friends about us. Thank you again for joining us today. And until next week, may all your trails be blessed.
In and out of hospitals, the days wore on. And someone came to visit one rainy afternoon and changed my life with a song. I knew that day was special, and the nurses fussed about all us kids. We didn't know what to expect. And he walked in with his guitar. No one made a sound. Then he came and he sat down on my bed. And he sang for me. He sang for me. The greatest man I'd ever meet was sitting right by me. Were a pair. Though the room was full of kids in the hospital that day, he shook my hand and winked and said, "Put her there." Then he sang for me. He sang for me. The greatest man I'd ever meet was sitting right by me. And as long as I live, changed my life with a song when he sang for me. He wrote me a letter. It's still hard to believe, but I'll always remember. Long ago, and that day is with me still. I sing for kids in hospitals today. Though I don't have a horse, this old wheelchair gets me round. I've kept his picture he gave to me that day.